From the grand ballroom of the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City, the National Broadcasting Company presents an address by Mr. Adlai E. Stevenson. He will speak before the American Committee for the Weizmann Institute of Science, which tonight confers upon him its honorary fellowship. Mr. Stevenson will be introduced by Mr. Dewey E. Stone, chairman of the board of the Institute. Mr. Stone.
Mr. Chairman, Your Excellencies, honored guests, ladies and gentlemen, as we are about to bring this memorable evening to a close, I should like to take this opportunity to thank our chairman, all of the members of our various committees, our very small but efficient, dedicated staff, and you, our loyal friends, for this wonderful response that is making tonight one of the most successful dinners we have ever held. As chairman of the Board of Governors and as chairman of the board of the American Committee for the Weizmann Institute of Science, I extend on my own behalf and on behalf of all of my colleagues our sincere appreciation for your generous support during these first 10 historic years. Through your understanding cooperation, we have been able to achieve the phenomenal success which has already been spoken of. All of us share in the justifiable joy of this achievement. As tonight we note the 5th anniversary of the official opening of the Weizmann Institute, the 20th anniversary of the original Daniel Seif Institute, and what would have been the 80th birthday of our beloved founder, I am sure we are not only taking pride in the past, but our very presence here this evening is tangible evidence of our determination to make the future worthy of this great past. I am sure I will be acting with your full consent when I extend by cable to Mrs. Vera Weizmann our collective cordial greetings and sincerest best wishes. I shall tell her the full details of this wonderful evening, and I know it will be most pleasing to her. We have established at the Weizmann Institute a rather unique honor, similar to the honorary degrees awarded by universities. Like an honorary degree, it is intended to do honor both to the recipient and to the institution extending the award. Up to this evening, the following distinguished men of science have indicated their deep interest in the Weizmann Institute of Science by accepting our honorary fellowship. Professor Niels Bohr, Copenhagen, Nobel Laureate in Physics. Professor Ernest B. Chain, Rome, Nobel Laureate in Physiology and Medicine. Professor Herman Mark, New York, Director of Polymer Research, Brooklyn Polytechnic Institute, and original chairman of our planning committee when the Weizmann Institute was founded. Professor Linus C. Pauling, Stanford, this year's Nobel Prize winner in chemistry. Professor Sir Robert Robinson of England, Nobel Laureate in chemistry and former president of the Royal Society. Dr. Francis Peyton Rouse, New York, member emeritus of the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, and General David Sarnoff, New York, chairman of the board, Radio Corporation of America. We are very happy that several of these men have found it possible to be with us this evening. Tonight it is my rare privilege to present our honorary fellowship to an American who has distinguished himself not as a scientist, but in the field of humanities and statesmanship. He has an unusually fine intellect, an irresistible personal charm, a ready wit, and an endless devotion to a great cause. To those of us fortunate enough to have known Dr. Weizmann, it seems particularly appropriate that we should include in the family of honorary fellows of the Weizmann Institute not alone scientists, but men of the character and qualifications of tonight's honored recipient. Dr. Weizmann's life, as you have so often heard, was a perfect combination of the scientist, statesman, and humanitarian. He would, I am sure, have completely approved of our first choice in this new field. Mr. Adlai Ewing Stevenson. By the authority vested in me by the Executive Council and the Board of Governors of the Weizmann Institute of Science, I am happy to present this citation. Encased in this beautiful and most unusual Israeli hand-wrought copper container, it is an exquisite parchment which reads as follows. The Executive Council of the Weizmann Institute of Science hereby elects Adlai Ewing Stevenson, Honorary Fellow of the Weizmann Institute of Science, in recognition of his vigorous championship of scientific and technological development in less fortunate areas of the world, his deep interest in the Weizmann Institute of Science as a center of research for the benefit of Israel, the Middle East, and all humanity, and his inspiring faith in mankind's future. I proudly welcome you into the distinguished family of honorary fellows of the Weizmann Institute of Science and admit you to all the honors, privileges, and responsibilities thereto appertaining.
Mr. Stone, Governor Harriman, Ambassador Eban, Mr. Feinberg, and ladies and gentlemen. That I am profoundly grateful for the Honorary Fellowship Award of the Weizmann Institute of Science hardly needs affirmation. And although I am not sure, Dr. Bohr, how pleased the scientists will be to welcome me. I am sure you all know quite well that I am touched and flattered by your extraordinary courtesy to me here this evening. I have, Mr. Feinberg, as perhaps you know, spoken at many $100-a-plate dinners around the United States, but this is the first time I've ever been invited to speak to a $250 dinner. One of your number assured me before dinner, however, that this was not in the least unusual, and that when General Marshall was your guest, it was a $500 affair. But my adroit friend, Mr. Feinberg, promptly assured me that there are only half as many people. All of you may not, however, know that I am not altogether a stranger to the man and to the institution that brings you together here in New York tonight. What is the matter with this thing?
Don't touch that. You want to raise the angles?
I just wanted to get the angles right. It's not... It was just 10 years ago that I was on a war mission in Europe that I dined alone one night in London with Dr. Weizmann. It was the time of the V2 rockets. It was the time of the Nazis' last convulsions of violence. Victory in the West was drawing closer. The blackout still lay heavy on London, but the darkness was full of a new hope. For hours, I sat spellbound in that small hotel room, listening to a tired old man quietly recount exciting fragments from the past and dream vividly of the future of Zion. It was the year of his 70th birthday, and it was the year of the beginning of the concept of what is now called the Weizmann Institute. He talked of how applied science could help new settlers in a new homeland earn a living, how the absorptive capacity of Palestine could be enlarged to accommodate many more by the development of new opportunities in industry and in agriculture. But he also talked of the spirit that would unite the ingathered outcasts of the world, the spirit of freedom, of intellectual liberty. After all, the free pursuit of knowledge, the free exercise of the mind, the free exploration of the riddles of nature and of human nature, these are the prerequisites of every other kind of freedom. And I think I understand better now, since I have been to Israel, what Dr. Weizmann was dreaming aloud that dark night in war-hushed London, that it was inconceivable that the Jewish people who had upheld their intellectual traditions in spite of centuries of bondage, of humiliation, of discrimination, should now submit to the most destructive tyranny of all, voluntary ignorance. That was 10 years ago. Almost 9 years later, I visited the Institute at Rehoboth during a all too brief visit to Israel. And there I met and I talked with the Institute's scientists, including Dr. Anna Weizmann, the sister of Dr. Weizmann and herself a scientist. And nearby I visited his widow in her lovely home, amid the green and the gold orange groves of Rehoboth. I had come to Israel from a journey around much of the world. In some places I had felt the rise of hope. One saw it in men's eyes. One heard it in men's voices. I had seen construction and reconstruction in war-shattered regions and underdeveloped areas. Yet I had also seen despair and human misery on an enormous scale. But paradoxically, I felt both hopeful and despairing in the purposeful halls of the Weizmann Institute. The Weizmann Institute is a place of hope, of light, of rationality, of dedicated toil and search for truth. It's a symbol of mankind at its best. It points the way to the peaks of human attainment. For already man has such knowledge that he could abolish the grosser forms of human misery. He can reduce disease and ignorance and approach nearer than ever before to paradise on earth. Yet, over and over, he turns aside to maim and to murder, to enslave, to smother truth and freedom, and to prepare with mighty exertion the means to make this planet, this earth, as cold, as lifeless as the moon. The pity of it all was the greater, it seemed to me, because there in this tiny Israel, one was the more keenly aware of the somber pathos of humanity. For while the scientists in this remarkable institution sought to improve the condition of mankind, their brethren rifles in hand, maintained everlasting vigil on the watchtowers. And there, through ancient Rehoboth, marched the ghostly hosts of Philistines, of Hebrews, Romans, Arabs, Crusaders, and all the others who have passed and gone forgotten, leaving desolation in their wake. Who profited from all these ancient wars in this ancient land? Who remembered even the causes of those faraway, lethal disputes? And if it was madness for the ancients to destroy one another, if it was madness to scorch the earth that gave them life, was it not now wicked madness for neighbors to endure one another only with hatred, or to die in conflict to no discernible end? Asking such questions there in the orange groves, on the ancient border between Judea and Philistia, one could recall how Sancho Panza once addressed himself at length to his donkey. And Cervantes wrote in that moving evocation of human loneliness, the donkey did not answer. Ours is an age of technology. Yet in these vast reaches of the Middle East, with its more than 50 million in people, its huge actual and its potential wealth, the Weizmann Institute is about the only scientific research group. But it's not an instrumentality, as you know, of the Israeli government. Deriving its financial support from private sources, the Institute is independent, it's flexible, it's unhampered by bureaucracy or the shifting courses of politics. Yet it's not these things that make this Institute worthy of our attention and of our generosity. It's important to the people of Israel, but it's also important to the free world. For science is civilized man's primary tool for gaining ascendancy over his material environment, in bending the resources of nature to his needs, and so bringing himself to higher estate. It enables man to overcome the lack of many natural resources by creating them, or by producing what might be wrested from nature only by at prohibitive cost. As the Institute is an instrument for changing the physical face of Israel, it is also clear that science can make great changes in much of the old Middle East. Many of the physical problems of Israel are those of her neighbors. Thus, for example, the Institute is trying to solve, among the other things that were mentioned here this evening, the problem of commercial desalting of seawater. And certainly the Institute could be enormously helpful to its neighbors as a regional school and experimental laboratory, an inspired and enduring point for, and a light against darkness. But this fruitful consummation awaits, of course, genuine peace between the Arab states and Israel. Men of goodwill everywhere would welcome the coming of such a fruitful relationship and a mutually enriching collaboration. These peoples are neighbors. They will continue to be neighbors. They are ethnic kin. They have similar problems of agriculture and of industry. They are peoples, moreover, who centuries ago shared the highest adventures of the human mind and spirit. Once they jointly brought to a still largely coarse, crude, undeveloped Western Europe medicine, astronomy, mathematics, philosophy, and a prose and poetic literature. I suggest that nowadays they might jointly bring about a renaissance of the Middle East, a revival of some of its ancient glories of learning and of the arts and the economic well-being of its people through the application of modern techniques to agriculture and industry. And since the peoples involved are ancient peoples who have seen the passing of many centuries and the death of many kings and have known the exaltation of victory and have known the disillusion of defeat, they are admirably, it seems to me, admirably equipped by time and experience to resolve their difficulties in the name of the common good. As for us in the United States, we must ask ourselves, as we have so often, whether the problem of the defense of the Middle East is one of rifles or of bread, or perhaps of both. Whether the enemy's despair and poverty within are not as menacing as the common enemies without. And I have noticed of late with great satisfaction what appears to be some change of emphasis in our government from the military aspects of security to long-range economic development, at least in Asia. But please don't expect me here to shed any light on the vexed problems of the Middle East, nor could I enlighten such an informed group as this. Yet as a friend of Israel since its inception, perhaps you will permit me to counsel patience in a very broad perspective. In all fairness, one must see the Israel-Arab conflict in the context of the whole Middle East and Far East security program. One must, I think, accept the overall assumption that an Arab world with a friendly orientation to the West is better for Israel than an Arab world with a friendly orientation in the other direction. One cannot, in good faith, take issue with the striving of our officials and other Western nations to improve relations, to improve cooperation and confidence in the Arab world. This would be a major goal of any administration in Washington. But one can inquire whether tensions are lessened or accommodations advanced by sending military equipment to Arab states if there is any ambiguity whatsoever about the purpose of such assistance, which is defense, not offense, which is peace, not war. Now, I too am glad to hear reassurances here this evening. And perhaps it would help to allay rising apprehensions for Britain and for France and for the United States to reaffirm their policy declared in 1950 of preventing aggression in the Middle East. And perhaps it would help if they strengthened it with guarantees. And certainly any general security system in the Middle East must take into account the military potential and the democratic vitality and reliability of Israel. Peace, economic progress, political stability in the Arab states and in Israel, in my judgment, are the essential conditions for effective defense of the area. A region divided against itself can be no bulwark against subversion or assault, and it is futile to build a system of defense on the quicksands of conflict. But let me return for one moment from this distant excursion to the Weizmann Institute, named in honor of one of the great men of our times, linguist, scientist, statesman, visionary, and first president of Israel. Although one of the most effective research complexes now in our world, the Institute has come far within a very short time, and there is every reason to believe that it will go farther in the future with your help, that it will make greater and greater contributions to Israel and to human understanding. Perhaps it will also help to point the way for the know why of ethics to catch up and to unite with the know how of science. For this is the greatest challenge to human understanding of all. And in conclusion, Let me add that while there are larger research institutions, to be sure, than the one that you honor, the one that has honored me, its promise is very great. And thanks to the interest, to the leadership, and to the support that I see for it here tonight, I think there may be something prophetic about the fact that its scholars are working on that soil where once the small David went out to meet the giant Goliath.
You've just heard an address by Mr. Adlai E. Stevenson, given at the annual dinner of the American Committee for the Weizmann Institute of Science at the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in New York City. On this occasion, Mr. Stevenson received the highest award of the Weizmann Institute of Science, its honorary fellowship. This has been an NBC Radio Network production.
This is the NBC Radio Network.